the Department of the Interior, in cooperation with the Columbia Broadcasting System, presents What Price America? The Department of the Interior is your agency of government charged with protecting and safeguarding the majority of your natural resources. Harold L. Ickes, Secretary of the Department, has said, "Conservation is the wise use of those gifts of nature upon which we rely for support, comfort, and spiritual solace. Every natural resource must be made to serve mankind while preserving all that is possible for the needs of future generations." What is our obligation in this democracy to use our resources wisely? Listen to the story of our past, of our triumphs and failures. Learn how to protect our heritage and the heritage of our children. Listen, America! We look at a map of the United States in blues and greens and reds and yellows, with latitude and longitude, with the height of mountains and the depth and the width of valleys, the length of rivers and the distance between towns and cities. We note that here lies gold, there silver, here zinc, there copper. We trace with our finger the coastline from Portland to Miami, from Seattle to San Diego. We trace every cove, every bay, every harbor, every inlet, every cape. We marvel at the exactness of this map, accurate to a thousandth of an inch. Without such maps, oil wells could not be drilled, land could not be sold, dams could not be built, irrigation ditches could not be dug. Conservation of our natural resources would be impossible, for without these maps, we could not know the accurate location of our natural resources. Behind the story of these maps is the story of a great conservation bureau, the Geological Survey. Behind the story of the Geological Survey looms the tremendous figure of Major John W. Powell. Dramatic himself, he brought drama to all he did. Here is the story of how you, John Powell, helped make it possible for us to know what a portion of our country is like, so we may know its beauty and its resources. This story of your expedition, John Powell, begins one spring day in 1869. In the Chicago office of a boat building company, an official questions his partner.
You say he has only one arm?
Yes, Hendricks.
But Adams, a man with such a handicap can't travel 900 miles down the most dangerous river in the country.
Then you've never met Major John Powell. A missing arm makes little difference to a man like him.
We shouldn't be building boats for him. We should be building a coffin.
If any man is equal to this job, Major Powell is.
But it's ridiculous. You've heard enough about the Colorado River to know that no party of men has been able to ride boats down those rapids and not be dashed to pieces.
John Powell wants us to build him those boats. We'll build them. That's our business. Come in.
Hello, Adams.
Major Powell. I'm glad to see you, sir. This is my partner, Mr. Hendricks.
How do you do? Oh, hello. Hello. What news concerning my boats?
Well, here are the plans right here on the desk.
Major Powell, I don't like the idea of building boats to send men to their death.
You're a poor businessman, Mr. Hendricks.
Perhaps, but I wouldn't like it on my conscience.
Yeah, smoke a cigar and keep quiet, Fred. Major Powell is the best judge of what he wants to do.
No, Mr. Hendricks is quite right. What I and my men intend to do is exceedingly dangerous. The Colorado River has defied examination for three centuries. No boat has ever been able to withstand the fury of those waters.
Yet you think you and your men can turn the trick. Mercy, I wish I had as little fear.
Oh, I'm frightened, all right. Scared to death, as a matter of fact. But I was scared to death at the Battle of Shiloh, where I left an arm on the battlefield. Fear has to be overcome when there's a job to do.
About your boats, Major Powell.
Forget business for a minute, Adams. I'm interested in what Major Powell plans. Now, why is this expedition needed, Major?
Well, I'm a geologist. It's my business to find out the structure of this country, the height of its mountains, the depths of its rivers, where gold and silver and other minerals lie hidden. How old in the history of time are its various regions?
But the Colorado River...
is unknown. But someday that river may be harnessed.
Oh, come, Major.
Yes. It is one of the most interesting regions in the entire world. In the great Grand Canyon flows the Colorado. Now hundreds of feet wide, now only a few feet wide. Deep in one spot and shallow in another. It roars and tumbles over great boulders for 900 miles until at last it empties into the Gulf of California. Someone must plot the course of the Colorado, observe the height and structure of every canyon. Otherwise, that region will master us instead of our mastering it. Well, Mr. Hendricks, do you see why I and my friends propose to do this?
So, Major Powell, you have four rowboats constructed of oak and pine with watertight compartments. They are the final word in strength and durability. You feel certain that no river can injure such boats as these. You ship them to the frontier settlement of Green River Station, Wyoming. On May 24th, 1869, on the shore of the Green River in Wyoming, you speak to your nine comrades.
Mr. Sumner and Mr. Dunn will come with me in the Emma Dean.
Yes, sir. Right.
My brother William and Mr. Bradley will be aboard the Kitty Clyde Sister.
Yes, sir.
The Howland brothers and Mr. Goodman will use the No Name.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Hawkins and Mr. Hall will use the Mate of the Canyon.
Yes, sir. Right, sir.
I have every confidence that our boats will withstand the severest battering of waves and rocks. We've everything we need.
Major Powell.
Yes, Captain Howland?
Have we enough food?
Enough to last 10 months.
I disagree.
Does anyone else disagree?
I think my brother is right. There ain't enough food.
Well, gentlemen, it seems as though the Howland brothers got up on the wrong side of the bed this morning.
I believe in doing things thoroughly, sir.
So do I, Mr. Howland. And as leader of this expedition, I tell you and your brother that we have everything we need. Now, please, let's not have any argument just as we're ready to start. Come, men, to the boats. We're on our way.
Down the Green River, dashing furiously for hundreds of miles towards Colorado, you ride between deep, dark gorges. You careen at railroad speed, waves breaking over your boats, down the Green River. Tossed by the rapids, danger and death already at your side, though you are still 200 miles from the Colorado itself. You sit in your pilot boat, you lead the way. You signal to the boats behind you whether to run the rapids or make for shore. 10 days pass, down the Green River.
Mr. Sumner.
Yes, Major.
These rocks are dangerous. We missed them by the skin of our teeth. Signal Captain Howland to watch out for them.
Yes, Major Powell.
If the rocks get any worse, we'll make for land.
Howland doesn't see my signal, Major.
He'll never notice those rocks the way they hide under the water.
My God, he's heading for them.
Look out, Howland!
Too late. He's struck.
He's broken in two.
The men are in the water.
What shall we do, sir?
Can you see them, Mr. Dunn?
One is in the whirlpool. The other two are hanging onto some rocks.
They're safe.
Hold on to those rocks until we get to you.
Row faster, Sumner. Row faster.
Goodman, hold on tight to this rock.
I've got it.
Are you all right?
Yeah. Look, there's Sumner.
He's coming for us.
He'll wreck his own boat.
No. He'll reach us.
Never.
Hold on, man. Quick, Sumner. Quick.
Sumner reaches them, brings them to shore. Late that night, John Powell, while your company sleeps the sleep of exhaustion, you sit by the campfire. It is deathly still, save for the music of the river close by. Your younger brother, William, leaves his worn blankets and quietly joins you.
John, try to sleep.
I'm all right.
Worrying about the accident today?
Such a reverse at so early a stage is awfully discouraging.
But we salvaged our barometers.
Yes, thank God.
We did lose boxes of food in the wreck.
Every ounce of food matters.
Please, John, sleep a little.
No, I can't. You and I and that coyote seem to be the only ones awake. A good time to think of the future.
We'll make it, John. Don't worry.
Like wild animals charging through a forest, the waters of the Green River break and roll and leap over your boats. You sit in your boat, John Powell, wet, tired. Your one arm aches from exertion. Down the river, you and your men travel for 2 weeks. Then one day, you bring your boats to shore. You and Bradley climb a ridge. Use your instruments to calculate the altitude. Observe the time, the latitude, the longitude. For 20 miles you walk, wading streams, through forests, across cienegas. Until at dusk, you arrive at an Indian hogan, where you find an old chief and his wife.
How old are you, Chief Sawiyat?
More than 100 years old. He not talk much. Me, his wife. White man call me Bishop. Me talk to you. You talk to me.
It's growing late, Major Powell. What can we learn here?
All right. Bishop, how do you grow your corn and squash? Is there rain here?
No rain, but much water in stream.
What does she mean?
She means they irrigate their lands. The Mormons are doing the same thing up at Salt Lake City.
I show you farm. I show you crops.
Yes, please.
But Major Powell...
If you want to go back to the men, go ahead.
But I don't see why you want to stay.
Listen, Bradley. I want to get back to civilization and say, look, here are facts about the Colorado River region. Here are temperatures, latitudes, and longitudes. At this point, the elevation above sea level is so much. At that point, the elevation is different. In this region, the soil is fertile. In another region, farming will be impossible. The cliffs are composed of such and such kind of rock. Here are the heights of the canyons. Indians live in such and such a place, and here are their habits and customs, and this is the way they irrigate their land. Now, that's why we're making the trip, Bradley. That's why we are risking our necks. If you've any idea that we're doing this just to be able to say we took our boats down wild rapids, then you are on the wrong track. You either come with me and let the bishop here show us how they irrigate, or I'll go alone.
I'm sorry, Major. I'll come.
Good. Please take us to your crops, Bishop. We are very interested.
So you make your observations, John Powell. So every day your boats ride down the Green River. Through the canyons with their jagged, broken walls, you read your barometer, you measure your strata. You play two parts. The leader of men in danger, the cool, objective scientist. The Green River will soon lead into the Colorado now. Time and again, your boat's capsized. Time and again, you've almost lost your lives. Now, after a month and a half of rapids and rocks, of high stone walls, of wind and waves, of wet clothing and food running low, you realize as you ride the rapids that within a few minutes you will reach the Colorado River. You speak to the men in your boat.
Steer for shore, Sumner.
Yes, Major Powell. Major Powell.
Yes, Mr. Dunn.
Look. Yes, Major. Look. The mouth of the Green River. The mouth of the Green River and the beginning of the Colorado.
At last, men. Signal to the others to steer to shore.
Look at the Colorado, Major. Even from here, it looks impassable.
We'll lick it, boys. We'll lick the Colorado as we've licked the Green. Gentlemen, before we start down the Colorado, I just want to tell you what lies ahead. You're going to find the Colorado even wilder than the Green River. When we get into the Grand Canyon, there will be rapids and falls, and on both sides of us, canyons a mile high.
A mile high?
Yes, Mr. Bradley, a mile high. A mile and a half in places. Hemming us in, no way of climbing them. We'll sleep on rocks. We'll find it difficult even to carry our boats along the rocks when the falls make it impossible for us to ride them down. Now you know what lies ahead.
If it's as bad as you say, why should we go on?
There speaks Mr. Howland again. And I presume his brother agrees with him?
I do.
It seems as though the Howland brothers think we are on a picnic. Well, we're not on a picnic, and we're not turning back. I want to hear no more remarks such as were just made. Come, gentlemen, to your boats.
Yes, sir.
John...
Yes, William.
You really think we can go down that river?
Let's try, William. What do you say? Let's try.
As you and your men start down the river, how can you know, John Powell, that back east, newspapers are reporting your death in the treacherous whirlpools of the muddy Colorado? And as the nation mourns you, you are sitting on the rocky shore of the unexplored river, looking up at the glory of the Grand Canyon. Beside you is your brother, writing down your notes. A few yards away, the rest of your party sits, weary and exhausted.
What have you written, William?
In some places, this rock has a fine columnar structure, often in concentric prisms. Masses of them have coalesced.
All right. I'll finish the notes later. There are more important things to do. Bradley, what's the thermometer reading?
42 degrees, sir.
At noon, it was 115 degrees.
Either you boil to death or you freeze to death.
That is your latest complaint, Mr. Holland?
Oh, forget it.
I will. Mr. Hawkins, what's the situation on food?
Well, we've only flour sufficient for 10 days. A few dried apples, but plenty of coffee.
How about the other supplies?
We lost 2 more blankets when the Emma Dean capsized.
Is all of our canvas useless?
I can answer that. Every bit of canvas is rotten.
Thank you, Mr. Holland. Well, we must make all haste possible. We must not lose any more supplies.
Look, John. Those clouds in the canyon.
Yes. Beautiful, aren't they? Have you ever noticed sometimes they roll down in great masses? Sometimes they drift away and hang around the peaks? Sometimes they play among the rocks above the river.
And sometimes, sir, they cover the canyon with a black roof like they do now, which means it'll rain any minute.
You're bright and cheerful, Mr. Howland, as usual.
It's hard to be bright and cheerful with thunder like that. Listen to it.
Rocky walls a mile high. Rocky walls like the walls of a prison. Rain, rain. But you and your men, John Powell, ride the rapids with the rain pouring down on you. Clouds and rain and the rocky walls of the canyon. 20 miles, 40 miles. Then the rain stops and the sunlight pours into the canyon. After supper of unleavened bread and coffee, you make your observations. Your brother writes them down.
What else shall I write down, John?
Write this. By means of my sextant, I observe the latitude. I find that the astronomic determination agrees very nearly with that of
Major Powell.
Yes, Captain Holland?
May I speak to you alone?
Of course. Here, let's walk over to those rocks.
As you say.
It's a wonderful night, isn't it? Soon the moon will rise over the canyon.
Yeah.
I don't know which is the more wonderful sight. When the canyon shines in the sunlight and the rocks and cliffs light up with every imaginable color, or when the moonlight strikes the canyon and the river is like a copper snake crawling between black shadows.
When does your turn poet?
Well, even you, Howland, will admit that you've never seen such a beautiful and yet terrifying spectacle as the Grand Canyon.
I'm more interested in other things. That's what I want to talk to you about.
Yes?
Why need you go any further? Abandon the river here.
No! A few more days and the trip will be over.
There are terrific dangers in the next few days. There's still that untamable river. How will you climb out of the Grand Canyon once you leave the river? How can we keep from starving before we reach the first settlement?
I'm not backing out now.
But you've got all the notes you need. Scientifically, you've succeeded in learning all you wanted to know about the Colorado River region. Why jeopardize our lives any longer?
We agreed to be in this together.
Oh, I'm not the only one who feels this way. My brother and William Dunn agree with me.
But, Captain, we need every man to stick with us, especially now. We'll have to carry the boats along the cliffs when the river is too rough to ride. You three have gone with us this far. Stick with us to the end.
We're at the end of our rope.
But only 2 more days, Howland, and then...
No time enough to drown. I'm tired of being terrified by the rocks and rapids. I'm not as brave as you are.
I'll let you in on a secret. I've been terrified as often as you.
I'm sorry. I'm leaving, Major, in the morning.
Well, naturally. I can't keep you here.
No.
Let's go back to the others. Say nothing to them. Promise me.
Not a word.
That night, John Powell, you cannot sleep. All night long, you pace up and down a little path on the sand beach along the Colorado River. You come to your brother, who hears you. He awakens. You talk with him.
Howland is determined to leave this morning. He and his brother and Dunn.
Let them go.
But the others may go with them.
What's that, Major Powell?
Oh, it's you, Hawkins. Did we wake you?
No, I wasn't sleeping. What's this I heard?
Are you willing to stick with us to the end of this trip?
Of course, sir.
Me too.
Why, Sumner, I thought you were asleep.
No, I heard you talking. Count me in right to the finish.
Thank you, Sumner.
Me too, sir.
Me too.
Well, you're all eavesdroppers. And all great fellows. Thanks. I'll tell the Howlands and Dunn that they will leave alone.
So the Howlands and Dunn leave you, John Powell. None of you know that those three men will never be seen again, that they will travel through Indian country and be ambushed and killed. You say your goodbyes. Howland and his two comrades leave. But you, John Powell, push on down the Colorado River. 20 miles, 40 miles, miles of waves and rocks and cliffs. And then one day, the river becomes too furious to ride on. Now you and your party climb over the jagged rocks, pulling your two remaining boats. You carry your boats along a ledge, in the rain and the hot sun and the cold of nightfall, until one evening you camp. High above the Colorado.
Well, Hawkins, let's have some supper.
Yes, Major Powell.
And while we're waiting, I'm going to take a little walk along the top of this granite. These are our last days to see every bit of beauty in this region.
I'll join you, Major. How about you, Hall?
Sure, Bradley.
We'll be back soon, Hawkins.
Yes, sir.
Listen to the rapids below.
Right below this ledge. We can't see it.
Yeah, you'd have to climb down this ledge a bit to get a view.
I want to take a look.
Well, be careful, Major.
I'm all right.
Put your foot on that rock over there, Major.
See that crevice, Major? Well, put your fingers in it.
Fine. I've got it.
Can you see the falls from there?
Yes. I'll go down a bit more and get a better look.
Well, be careful now.
Men.
Yes?
I'm afraid I'm stuck here.
Good Lord.
I can't go forward nor backward. My one arm isn't enough to help me.
Hold on, Major.
Great Scott, if he loses his grip, he'll fall into the rapids.
Hawkins, bring a line, quickly.
We'll get you out of this, Major.
Please hurry. My hand hurts.
Hurry, Hawkins.
You'll have to cling to that crevice till Hawkins brings a line, Major.
All right. I'll try.
Here's a line. What's happened?
Major Powell.
Catch hold of the line, Major.
I can't let go of this rock. If I grab the line, I'll fall.
If we could pin him to the wall, then he could use his hand to grab the line.
I have an idea.
What is it?
Hall.
Yeah?
See that oar on the ground over there? Quick, give it to me.
Yeah. Here it is. What do you want with an oar?
Hawkins, that crevice in the rocks. Beyond the Major.
Hurry, men.
We're trying, Major.
Get that oar in the crevice, and we'll pin the Major to the ledge with it.
I can't hold on much longer.
The oar won't reach. No, it's reaching. It's in the crevice.
Is the oar tied against your body, Major?
Yes. Yes, it'll hold me against this rock.
Then let your arm free and grab this line.
I've got it.
Good. Up with them, boys. Up with them.
That night, your arm aches miserably, Major Powell. You know that this is the last lap of the trip. In the morning, you and your men climb down the cliffs carefully, watching for the safety of the boats as they are lowered. Now, you and your men once more ride the rapids. The river runs swiftly. Only a few miles now, John Powell. Only a few more miles.
Watch out, Bradley. Those rocks, they're dangerous.
We missed them, sir.
Steady, Sumner. Rapids ahead.
Here we go, Major. Hold tight.
The faster we ride, the faster we'll reach the end of the journey.
Major, the cliffs are getting smaller.
We're coming out of the canyon.
Well, that means we're almost finished.
Stop talking and steer. And look out for those waves.
Look! Look, men!
The end of the canyon.
Signal to the other boat.
They see it, too. Major Powell, we've done it.
Yes, we've done it, men. We've done it, thank God.
After the trip is done, John Powell, you write in your simple, touching report.
Ever before us has been an unknown danger, heavier than immediate peril. Every waking hour passed in the Grand Canyon has been one of toil. Now the danger is over. Now the toil has ceased. Now the gloom has disappeared. Now the river rolls by us in silent majesty. The quiet of the camp is sweet. Our joy is almost ecstasy. The Colorado River and the Grand Canyon have been explored. This region is no longer mysterious. Now it is known to the people of the United States. Let them use it to the best of their ability.
Major John Powell's expedition marked the beginning of geographical and geological surveys of the far southwest. Soon, men realized that a bureau was needed to map accurately the various regions of this country, to determine mineral distribution, and to find those areas suitable for water power and irrigation developments. 10 years later, this bureau was established in the Department of the Interior. In 1879, Congress established the Geological Survey. Since that time, this bureau has been the fountainhead of conservation activities. All conservation bureaus, such as the Bureau of Reclamation, have proved dependent upon the work of the Geological Survey. The depth and shoreline of rivers, the mileage and deposits of rivers, the amounts of water carried by rivers must be known before the Bureau of Reclamation can plan any irrigation project or design any dam. The work of Major John Powell of the Geological Survey, which grew out of his exploration of the Colorado River, provided basic information without which the Bureau of Reclamation could not have built Boulder Dam. This great dam stands in one of the canyons of the Colorado River, controlling its floods, saving its water for use in irrigation, and taking advantage of its rapid descent to generate power. Boulder Dam has been completed just a few miles downstream from the point where Major Powell's little band landed. Here is conservation. Conservation must be the American 20th century ideal. Look to the future, America! Here is a special announcement. Listen carefully.
Every listener to this program may have a free publication packed full of interesting information about our country's natural wealth. It is a publication which every man, woman, and child in America should have. Send for your free copy now. Address What Price America, Washington, D.C., and a free publication will be sent to you at once. Let me repeat, if you want this important booklet, just send your name and address, a postcard will do, to What Price America, Washington, D.C.
Next week at this same time, the Department of the Interior, in cooperation with the Columbia Network, presents the 10th program of the series, What Price America. Listen next week to What Price America.
The series, What Price America, is written by Bernard C. Schoenfeld, based upon research by Hugh Russell Fraser. The Columbia String Orchestra was conducted by Leon Goldman, and the entire production was under the direction of William N. Robeson. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.